ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. हरे कृष्ण. वेल्कम् टु इस्कान् आफ् सिलिकन् वेली, टु दिस् ऑस्पिशियस् ओकेशन् आफ् श्रील भक्तिविनोद ठाकुर्स् डिसअपियरेन्स् डे फेस्टिवल्. दिस् डिसअपियरेन्स् डे आफ् श्रील भक्तिविनोद ठाकुर् हस् been a catalyst for us here at ISKCON of Silicon Valley since the beginning, or very near the beginning, when we took up in earnest the process of book distribution in Sankirtan. It was the first of marathons that are off the beaten path, because everyone thinks of December as naturally being the marathon, but we had thought to work towards pleasing Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur on his disappearance day, because it comes in the summer, but mostly because, well, entirely because we had sensed in the songs we were singing and the statements that Srila Prabhupada made about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur being the source of bringing of mercy and bringing back Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement to the Western world after it had been obscured for some time. And it just happened to be in the summertime, which was perfect for us. And in the first marathon that we took up, we had set, which now would seem like ridiculously small goals, but at that time they seemed overly ambitious, which tells you a little bit about how growth works. And we had been back and forth about whether we were pushing too hard or not in setting such goals. And then we decided to depend on the mercy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and move ahead. And of course, the results, well, not of course, but I can say that the results were that encouraging. We had beaten our goals by a long shot and kept going from there. This outreach that we do all over the world was very much, or that we do all over the world in ISKCON, is very much in the mood of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was called by some the seventh Goswami. And the reasoning behind it was of the group of Vaishnavas who said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur should be the seventh Goswami. It's because the six Goswamis had been empowered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for four main tasks. One was to reveal the holy places, find out where they were, excavate them, and resurrect the holy spots, especially in Vrindavan, and also to establish deities in various places, and also to bring out the various scriptures for the benefit of everybody. And the fourth was to establish the behavior of Vaishnavas, Vaishnava achar. So if you go through the teachings of the six Goswamis, I mean, the Srinivasa Acharya sort of summarizes in his song about the Goswamis the way in which they achieved all these things, beginning with Krishnot Kirtanagana Nartana Paro Premamritam Bonidi Hanana Shastra Vicharanaika Nipano Shad Dharma Samstapako. In all the stanzas of that song, the Shad Goswami Ashtakam, we find that they had established, the six Goswamis, the major temples in Vrindavan, like Radha Govinda Temple, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Radha Damodar, Radha Madan Mohan, Sanatana Goswami. All the Goswamis had established their main temples, and then they had revealed various holy places. It's actually extraordinary what they did there. And it's epic, the amount of shastric evidence they brought to bear, which covers Sambandha Gyan, Abhideya Gyan and Prayojana Gyan. We have the seminal work Brihat Bhagavatamrita by Sanatana Goswami, which describes the process of Sambandha Gyan, establishing one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then, of course, there are more, but the ones that are most representative, Rupa Goswami gave us the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which in minute detail tells about how to practice devotional service. That's the meaning of Abhideya. And Prayojana, we have Ujjvala Nilamani and other scriptures that talk about the ultimate goal and what that looks like. So they gave a clear path there. And then, of course, Sanatana Goswami gave us the Hari Bhakti Vilas, following the notes of Gopalbhatta Goswami and the instruction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to bring out a book to tell all about Vaishnava behavior. Of course, one can go on and on about the accomplishments of the six Goswamis in revealing altogether the pastimes of the Lord, the holy places, Vaishnav etiquette and achar, and the scriptures and so on. So the reason that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was named seventh Goswami was because he did all those things in Navadvipa. And of course, in the theology of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Navadvip Dham is non-different from Vrindavan Dham. It's the same Dham. Only one Dham is called Madhurya. That means it's sweet, sweet. The Sri Vrindavan Dham. And Navadvip Dham is the same Dham, same, except for it's called Audorya, which means that the sweetness has filled up the container so much that now it's overflowing and it's running out everywhere. And the mood there is in the mood of distribution. Maya margam dayite ipsitam vadavan, described by Karbhajana Muni, that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually chased after the conditioned souls to give them mercy so they could experience this highest taste. And so what did Bhaktivinoda Thakur do? Well, he's famous for many things. Some of them we can name. One of them is for revealing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Janmashtan. And why is this important? Well, of course, as is mentioned in the Shastra, like the Bhakti Ratnakara and other scriptures, Navadvipa Dham Mahatmya and so forth, the Advaita Bhavan and Srivasangam and Gadadhar Bhavan, all of these are holy places, and they're resided in by the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They're all said to be near Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace. So if you don't know where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace is, you don't know where all the other places are either. You have no, that's the main point of reference. And for a long time, it was not known exactly where it was. People had speculated and assumed it was in a certain place. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur divined that place. Of course, he used modern methods as well by looking at maps and doing due diligence through empiric study. But he also, as acharyas do, or as acharyas receive special guidance from the Lord, and standing from his particular vantage point from his abode, he was able to see an effulgence from that place. It is said that he was with his a son and another person and said, could you see that? And his son said, I saw it. And the other person said, I didn't see anything. And of course, it's mentioned as well that he noticed that there was a cloud of dust coming from Nisringapali each morning and terminating in this place where the effulgence was. And soon he intuited that this was Nisringadev coming from Mangalartik at Mahaprabhu's birthplace. But ultimately, to confirm all of his research and the indications that he was getting. Gaurafir Vava Bhumi Stam Nirdeshta Sajjana Priya Vaishnava Sarva Bhuma Sri Jagannathaya Te Namaha. He brought Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. Of course, his pranam, the pranam that we say to Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj is that he's the one who confirmed, who discovered the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace. And how was that? Actually, going back a ways, Bhaktivinoda Thakur took Diksha when he was 42 years old from Bibina Bihari Goswami. Bibina Bihari Goswami was younger than Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur had great respect, reverence for his Diksha Guru. And nonetheless, at an all-night kirtan, did you have anyone always gone all-night kirtans? On an Ekadashi, he saw the dancing of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who was at that time over 100 years old. He was called Vaishnava Sarvabhauma, which means on all the earth, Sarvabhauma, all throughout the earth. The implication is there is no one more senior than this Vaishnav. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur came into that kirtan that night and was never the same afterwards. Have you ever been in a kirtan like that? That's what you want to be in, is a kirtan where you come out and you're never the same. In fact, Vaishnava association is so powerful that the Shastra says that even if you have a fraction of a second of association with a pure Vaishnav, then you can attain perfection. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, entering into that kirtan, the Ekadashi kirtan, felt the presence and the kirtan of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who, although at a senior age, was dancing and singing the holy names, and also like a lion, it is said. He was dancing like a lion. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur felt the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in one of his bhajans, Nite ki namin eche re namir hate sharamulya nam dite che che re. Who is this Nityananda? What is the nectar of the name that he's brought us? Oh, how wonderful this is. And Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj was apparently singing this again and again, that how wonderful this name is that Lord Nityananda has brought us. And seeing this exalted Vaishnav dancing and singing in the kirtan, Bhaktivinoda Thakur became attracted to him. And soon Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj became his most substantial source of shiksha and guidance in spiritual life. So when it came time to confirm the Janmasthan, as he had triangulated and come to this spot, in fact, he found that there was profuse tulsi plants growing in that area. And ultimately, how do you confirm all these things? There's Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So finally, he brought Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj to come to the place. It's kind of an echo chamber in there. I'm not sure if it's the best place for a nursery, but so when Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj came to that place, and he had a servant called Bihari who used to carry him around in a basket, because when you get over 100 years old, it's not like you're walking everywhere. He was, you see pictures of him, he was sort of bent over, and also said that although he could see perfectly well, his eyelids at that time were drooped over his eyes, so to see, they actually had to hold up his eyes like his eyelids so he could look out. And the idea was that he was being carried around by Bihari Prabhu in the basket, but when he came to that place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance, then he jumped out of the basket and began dancing in that place in ecstasy and confirmed that this is the place. So that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, starting from there, then reconstructed where all the other places were. And it was very much confirmed when they're excavating that area, and everyone here has been there to the place. If you haven't, you can sign up and come on one of the yatras and feel the ecstasy of being in that place. And they dug up the Adhoksaja Vishnu deity that was worshipped by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's father, Jagannath Mishra. Is in the scripture that he worshipped this deity, and when they dug up the earth there was the deity. Now it's on the altar. And when you go to that temple at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Janmasthan, you can ask the Pujari to bring the deity closer, and he'll bring him on a little Shringhasana. And you can see the deity up close and have darshan. And so he established the holy place of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birth, and then consequently all the other places, which are all, as you'll see, related to Lord Krishna's places of pastimes in Vrindavan. Each one of the islands of Navadvip then has its corresponding place in the land of Vrindavan and Krishna's pastimes, because they're parallel dhams. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, his main service besides that was what all acharyas do, and that is bringing out the shastra that establishes the sampradaya and also especially the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wrote the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, which talks about the duties of each person in the Varnashrama and how they will relate those duties to serving Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or to serving Krishna according to the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He gave the Jiva Dharma, which I found out recently. He wrote within 2.5 months. Come on, you can respond now. Yeah, 2.5 months is not a long time to write a full-fledged novel like that. It's actually astounding. Most people will take that long just thinking about whether they're going to write or not. But actually, acharyas are very special because they're receiving this information from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they're manifesting it. It's not that they have to sit around and think about it a lot, because it's coming to them, and that's why they're acharyas. I was talking to this great pundit when I was in the UK. His name's Kartik Chandra. He grew up in a family that was a little different than most, kind of from a throwback period where people in the family speak Sanskrit to one another. He just kind of grew up knowing Sanskrit. His grandmother spent 10 hours a day up to the time she left her body reading Bhagavatam. You know, things like that. Anyway, he was showing us some original scriptures. He has a whole collection of Bhagavatams and Bhagavad Gitas handwritten. One of the Bhagavatams is over 600 years old. It has all 12 cantos. And also, he was, being an expert Sanskritist, he was showing us various passages from commentaries of many of the acharyas. And in some sections where parts of the shastra had been lost, because things get lost all the time. I don't know about in your house or your car or life, especially... When it's lost, things get lost, especially when you travel. It's like, where was that thing again? We left it back there in New York. So it's just the way the material world is, and shastras get lost all the time for various reasons. Ants eat them, white ants. They like to eat books. You have to protect these ancient shastras. There's a certain kind of oil that you put on a cotton swab and put it into the shastra, scares away the white ants. Kesha Bharti Maharaj lost his whole set of books in Vrindavan. He didn't even know it. He came back and he pulled it out and they were all empty because the ants had eaten them all. And it took a long time to ward off the hordes coming in and eating them. It's an inevitability that they get lost over time from floods, from ants, and so forth. But he was saying at various intervals, you'll find in the commentaries that said, oh, the ants ate the rest. And they don't bother to rewrite it, reconstruct it, because said God spoke it through me and it was there, and now it's not there, so that's just it. It's just gone. I asked him about the verse. I wanted to know more about the verse that says, Aham vedmi shukaveti vyasaveti naveti va bhaktim bhagavatam grahayam na budhaya na chatikaya. You know that verse. Aham vedmi shukaveti. Yeah, it says, I know, Shiva's saying, I know, Shukadev knows, Vyas may or may not know the meaning of Bhagavatam. Try to wrap your head around that. And, we were going into the commentaries about that, how it is that the Acharya, like what he's saying there, according to Balabhacharya, is that Vyasadeva, he was in samadhi. He came out of samadhi, and he was still just fresh out of samadhi. So what all the acharyas call what he spoke in the Bhagavatam, samadhi bhashya. It's like other people, they speak nonsense when they wake up. Or they're intoxicated and they speak nonsense. Everyone's speaking nonsense for one reason or another, but Vyasadeva was directly seeing Krishna in the spiritual world, so what he said afterwards was called samadhi bhashya. And so the acharyas, it's kind of like he was just a broadcast station. He's indicating, it's like a radio, Does the radio know what it's saying? Can it go back and say, this is what I said? Or is it just broadcasted? So it's kind of indicating, Vyas, he's broadcasting all these things. It's so deep and vast and coming from Krishna that, do you know it all? Or is it just coming out of you? So the acharyas, they are conduits, and they're bringing forth this current of spiritual information from the spiritual world. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was like that. Otherwise, how could he, as a grihastha with 13 children, anyone have 13 kids yet? 13 children. He had one child by his first wife. She died early on. Child was 1 year old. He remarried. Several times he had two jobs. He didn't have good health throughout his life. Just taking away all the excuses anybody might have. Because someone said, I have kids. Well, he had 13 kids. Well, I don't feel well. He was sick all the time. He worked harder than anybody. He got transferred here and there. He had a really rough childhood. Also, cholera wiped out his family. He had to live with his uncle. He raised most of his siblings himself. And meanwhile, actually his uncle was a great poet. Calcutta was known as the jewel and the crown of the English Empire. It's kind of a joke because they stole all the jewels in. Now, as a result, they got Brexit, so joke's on them. Anyway, he lived with his uncle, who was a great poet, famous poet. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote over 100 books. His schedule, at least in his later life, I don't know about his earlier life, but as an acharya and writer, he would rise at 1 in the morning and do his 64 rounds and also write. And then take a little breakfast and go to work. He worked, as all of you know, as a magistrate. He was also much sought after because he was so expert, and he solved more cases than any other judge, but they stuck. Higher percentage of sticking. So you can solve a lot of, decide a lot of cases and then have them reversed on appeal. and that's not very good, but his expertise was such that they weren't reversed, so he was much in demand. He also managed the Jagannath Temple. And from what I know about the Jagannath Temple modern day, it's a hard job. I mean, managing a small temple takes a little concentration. But the Jagannath Mandir, that's a big deal. They have more offerings, I think, there than any other place. And, it's not so easy dealing with thousands of pujaris who live all over town. But he did that also. I mean, it's actually amazing. Everything about his life is empowered. If he just took his material career, you'd say that was unusual, and he'd win some kind of award for that. But if you add everything together, you find the life of an extraordinary personality who's, it's inscrutable, it's indescribable, practically indescribable, how prolific he was in all areas. And then you find that his main object in life was to see that people in the age of Kali Yuga would be able to get Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement had become obscured, and it's mentioned many times how we can understand this from the incident when Bhaktivinoda Thakur had wanted to study the Chaitanya Charitamrita and was looking for a copy, and he couldn't find one. It was not readily available. It's not like nowadays when you can just call the BBT and they'll send you one. And scriptures are hard to come by, and especially at that time, they were very difficult to get. They were rare. But the Chaitanya Charitamrita had become so obscure that nobody knew where it was. It wasn't like you could have a scribe copy you another one or something like that. And it took him a long time to find a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's how obscured the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would become in his teachings. So he brought that out, and he also Bhaktivinoda Thakur, after bringing out the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and starting to spread them, realized that it was a difficult task. And he quoted a verse from Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur talking about how the path, following the path of bhakti, is fraught with difficulties because of the influence of the age of Kali Yuga. Still really loud out there, but I guess it's okay. This is from a story I read recently when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was feeling extremely frustrated with the obstacles on the path of people in general for taking to the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This verse is from Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati. He says, Kala kalir balina indriya vairi varga Sri bhakti marga ihakantaka koti rudha Ha ha kwayami vikala kimaham karomi Chaitanya Chandra Yari Nadya Kripam Karosi. It is the age of Kali. My enemies, the senses, are very strong, and the path of devotion is now blocked by millions of thorns. Alas, alas, where shall I go? I am overwhelmed. What shall I do, O Chaitanya Chandra, if you do not bestow your mercy upon me now? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was praying to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to please assist him in removing these thorns. And the thorns really were the obstacles to taking to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's path of devotional service. In the age of Kali, people are so overwhelmed with bad qualities that even such a sublime teaching as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu becomes difficult to follow. And Prabhupada used to remark about this because he would say that it's such a simplified process that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given. And he would say that I've simplified it down to the most basic principles. He said, no, you cannot even follow that. So that was the mood of Bhaktivinoda Thakur when he was in Puri. He was praying and crying to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to remove these obstacles. And he writes about the guidance he got was from Mahaprabhu personally to bring out to the whole world the loud chanting of the holy name. Because through the chanting of the holy name, taking shelter of Krishna's holy names, then everyone can develop the qualification to follow the path of bhakti. Of course, this is, as we know, the main teaching of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it comes out in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalaunas Deva, Nasteva, Nasteva, Gatiranyata. But how do you package that and put it together so that everybody in the world can take it? And that's what an acharya does. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, just after that, and inspired, as I mentioned before, by Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj's kirtan, started the Namahata. And the Namahata is actually a marketing scheme to make sure that everyone gets a chance to chant Hare Krishna. Because that's the only means by which anyone in the age of Kali can make any advancement, if they take the name of the Lord. So that Namahata was very successful. It employed many, many people with different tasks, just like we do for the Sankirtan. You know, creates jobs, jobs, jobs for everybody to be engaged in spreading the holy names. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's scheme had that. And people could take up the duty of opening a franchise and then spreading the holy name from that place so that other people could take it and become successful on the path of bhakti. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur then assigned himself a position in that marketing scheme. He has an intricate level of workers in the marketplace, and he assigned himself the position of sweeper. So this is very symbolic, actually, that he wanted to be the sweeper in the marketplace. It's obviously a sign of humility, but also has other meanings as well. Because this idea comes up, Prabhunananda Saraswati Thakur writes in one poem that he would like to be the one stick, you know, these brooms, they have little tiny sticks. One stick in the broom of Lalita Sakhi, who's sweeping the area where Lord Krishna and Radharani perform their pastimes. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's idea of sweeping the marketplace is to sweep the obstacles out of the way of all the people in general. This was his idea because, as I mentioned here in this poem by Prabhunananda Saraswati Thakur, poetically he's saying that there are many thorns. These are the obstacles to the path of devotional service, on the path of devotional service. So he wanted to sweep them out of the way. And he did so by bringing out these various literatures like the Jiva Dharma and Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita. Inspired by his Shiksha Guru, he came out with the Harinam Chintamani and other books that told specifically and for just ordinary people and ways they could understand them, how to practice the path of bhakti. In fact, the Goswamis had written many, many books in Sanskrit. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur takes those books and then he writes songs about each verse. For instance, you'll find in your Sharanagati Gitavali books that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written bhajans about, for instance, the Namashtakam. And he writes a commentary on the Namashtakam through his songs. And so people like songs, they're singing them all the time. You sing the song and you learn the philosophy and how to practice bhakti. And this was a big deal for people in general because a lot of people didn't read Sanskrit and couldn't understand the Goswami literatures, but he extended them to everybody and basically swept the thorns or the obstacles out of the way so that people could understand. What to speak of coming out strongly against the various kinds of upasampradaya that had been introduced since the time that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had started his Sankirtan movement. These were also thorns that Bhaktivinoda Thakur helped to remove, not the least of which was by bringing into the world his son, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was especially adept at challenging the upasampradayas and moving them out of the way. Do you all have enough air in here? Is everyone okay? Okay. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, pardon me? It's stuffy. We need more air. Just provide more air. You'll see. There's a formula that the more oxygen you have coming to your brain, the better you can think and more sharp you are. Yes. Manjula Kanta.
Guru Maharaj, as you explained so nicely, just like I think Sukadeva Goswami, we describe him as giving us something that's, he is like the, remember we read about a mango and then he gives us the chewed mango, so it's even more tasty. The same way the acharyas simplify, they filter it down so that we can just get the essence. But I notice that sometimes we can sing the songs for years and never quite grasp what the song represents. So how do we, like, we get to a point where we don't have time even to read. We might do an audiobook if you could just record it for us. But I don't have time to listen to that. And then we keep finding excuses, even though the acharyas keep melting it down for us. If you asked us to do 64 rounds, 85% of us would disappear. And yet, with the 16 rounds, we come to you with 1,000 complaints. It's so difficult, Maharaj, to do 16 rounds a day. Is it the natural psychology of a person to always want it easier? Do we struggle against that? Or is it the way the system is stacked against us?
Yeah, well, it's not really about time so much as you're mentioning, you're indicating, it's really about taste. Ultimately, we do whatever we want because we're living entities. We're like little samples of Krishna. Krishna does whatever he wants. We do whatever we want, ultimately. Yeah, I mean, we do get bogged down because we're not all powerful and we don't have unlimited energies, but we do get whatever we want ultimately. Krishna makes that clear in the Gita, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan, Pitrin Yanti Pratir Vrata. And he says, Ye Yata Mampa, hey, I'm here. Whatever you want, you can have it. Just stop asking for stupid stuff. Because I'll give it to you. You know, I'm offering you whatever you'd like. It's like, be intelligent. So intelligence means to figure that out. And there is an interim period when you're sick, when you're taking the medicine and you're still sick. And you can always say, you know, this medicine doesn't work. I have a friend who does that all the time. He'll go to the doctor and he's give me some medicine. He'll take it. A half hour later, he's saying it doesn't work. I'm saying, would you give me give it a chance? You know, like give it 3 days or something. No, I want a new medicine. He always does that. I mean, it's crazy. He takes every kind of antibiotics. You don't take antibiotics. It's probably a virus. You know, it's like, no, I'll take this. Anyway, you know, people get impatient. They want a quick thing. One thing I've noticed is with any kind of bhajan, is if you can get it from a devotee who actually has a taste, or if you can just get a little taste from a devotee who has a taste, that can really move you. Like I saw Janavi Jivana. I maybe told this story already, but it was meaningful for me because she was talking to Nam Ras Prabhu on his late morning program show, interview show, and she was saying that, as a second generation devotee, And sometimes kids go through this at a certain point. They go like, did I think of this or did somebody else think of this? Wait a minute. Do I actually want to be a devotee? I don't know to what extent she was thinking that, but the implication was she hadn't become completely settled or determined that I'm going to go the distance and this is what my life is. And she had gone and visited Jamuna, the Prabhupada's disciple. And she was so impressed with her that she said that on the way home in the back of her parents' car when they were driving back from that, she had an epiphany where she said, I want to be like her. You know, she felt something, and she recounted how Jamuna was always praying and everything she said was connected to Krishna, and not in a pedantic way, not in a fanatical way, but just from the heart. You know, she had a taste and it was overflowing, did Jamuna. And this young devotee felt it. And that's when she changed her mind. She said, that's what I want to do. So, and that's the change that takes place when you meet a Vaishnava who actually has a taste. You hear one bhajan, you go like, okay, I'm in. I'm going to be like that. Or, you know, it comes from a higher position. You know, it's not an intellectual discovery. But in the beginning, we do have to use our intelligence to sort things out. Because, I mean, Krishna makes so much sense in the Bhagavad Gita. I was just reading it the other day, actually. On our way to the airport, I was reading it, chapter 2. Are we on chapter 2 now? That's good, because I'm trying to keep up. And I was reading chapter 2, and it says, Krishna, avinashi tutadvidi yena sarvamidamtana. I was thinking, these verses made me a devotee. When I picked up this little copy of Bhagavad Gita, it was just translations, and I read that just after Arjuna surrenders and says, that's it, I quit, I can't figure it out, I'm surrendering to you. And then Krishna, just the nectar that flows out of his mouth after that, you're not your body, you're actually eternal. And those verses, I remember reading them and saying, where's this been all my life? All my millions of lives, you know, now I have to wait to, and you know, it's just such an exhilarating experience to hear all of a sudden that you're eternal. You have unlimited prospects for advancing in spiritual life. So you have to refresh that every day and remember what brought you to the dance in the first place. And if you can do that long enough to keep your intelligence sharp enough, evam buddhi param buddhva samstabhyatmanamatmana jahi shatra mahabahu kamarupam darasadam, you can overcome all the noise that's coming from the lower chakras in your life. You know, because there's all kinds of complicated noise, but when your intelligence is fortified by being around devotees and by hearing and chanting properly, you got to have a bhajan in life. Get your bhajan going. Really do. Find a sacred place and really make it happen. You got to have a place where, you know, you feel some ecstasy every day. That I like this, I like this, I like this, I like this. You know, you got to feel like that at least for a few hours a day, or at least 5 minutes. And then that'll light the rest of your life so that you're not overwhelmed by all this other noise and complete nonsense. Because it is, it's total nonsense. The sense is that, you know, they're just interacting with the material world. It doesn't mean anything. We were in Japan in April, and there's a devotee. He got a new house there, and they had to go through an asbestos thing. It's some technical thing. If it's a house older than a certain time, then you have to have it checked for asbestos. And if they find there was any in the floor, what was it, the floor or the ceiling? In the walls and ceiling? And so they have to come in and cordon off, they have to bring in hazmat teams and everything like that, cordon off the whole place. It cost him an extra $20,000 or something. He's the funniest devotee anyway. So we're up there talking to him on the roof of his new place, and he said something that stuck in my mind. It's just a mantra. But he was just saying how it was just meaningless. They didn't really do anything, and it didn't really protect them from breathing in asbestos, because people have been living in that house for the last 20 years anyway. And he was just, we were all talking back and forth about how much it would cost and the process they go through, and he just looked at it and he goes, it has no meaning. I was thinking, you can apply that across the board here in the material world. It has no meaning. So on these days when the acharyas come and go, it's an opportunity to remember our great fortune. We actually have association with these great souls. That's the sum and substance of spiritual life, is getting connection with the great souls. And, you know, as one of my godbrothers, dear godbrother of mine, who really, actually, I got so much of my appreciation for Bhaktivinoda Thakur through him. But, you know, he has this kind of coarse way of expressing things, and it's sort of poetical too, but he always say, nobody tops the Thakur, and so many other things. But I just remember being around him for some time, and he'd always be absorbed in thinking about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, singing bhajans by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the depth of the sweetness and the inspiration that you can get from the bhajans, from the writings, and from studying the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it's unlimited. And Prabhupada talked about how, you know, it's his mercy that revived the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. We have him to thank for bringing to light the entire movement and everything else. So ultimately, just as Prabodhananda Saraswati, in finishing, said that I want to be a stick in the broom of one of the Sakis sweeping that place, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, let me be a sweeper of the marketplace and pushing the obstacles out of the way. And so we can pray something like that too, that let me be a stick in the broom of Bhaktivinoda Thakur sweeping the marketplace. You know, the work that you're all doing here is making it possible for people to actually come to Krishna Bhakti, which is practically impossible in the age of Kali Yuga, except for the mercy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, who've brought us the possibility from removing the obstacles. So you're actually working together, you know, making up a big broom that's sweeping the nonsense, the meaningless activities of life out of the way so that people can actually take to devotional service. And there's nothing more important than that, which is summed up in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's final statement, Jive Doya Krishna Nam Sarva Dharma Sar. If you want to know where to place your attention, if you want to know what the highest form of religion is, and the conclusion of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and that is, show compassion to all living entities by widely spreading the holy name of the Lord. That's the best thing that there is. So on this day, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Divine Disappearance Day, I pray on behalf of everyone here, you'll have a chance to agree or disagree at the end, that we may be further engaged in helping to expand his movement. Please especially help us to fill any gaps there are that disallow people from taking readily to the process of devotional service. Please give us not only the intelligence but the compassion to take the trouble to close those gaps so that all the people in Silicon Valley and beyond can actually take up the practice of Krishna Bhakti. Any obstacle that's this is a long prayer, don't mind, but any of the obstacles that, like envy of other living entities, exclusivity, trying to be feeling entitled and envious of others, please remove all those from our hearts so that we can be fully compassionate and extend the process of bhakti to everybody in this modern age. And we pray to Bhaktivinoda Thakur to please make that possible in our lives. Anyone who agrees with this long prayer in part or in whole, please say Hare Krishna. Now we have a ceremony to offer Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur the results of our last Sankirtan marathon, the so-called monthly Sankirtan festival that never stops. So we're going to stand up, move all the asanas to the back. We'll even roll up this rug And we're going to make an arc around Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's and Srila Prabhupada's Vyasasanas, and then we'll have the offering. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Gaur Premanande Hari Bol.
Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman.